Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today, we'll discuss the recently published article by Farman et al. Titled Myosin Head Orientation, a Structural Determinant for the Frank-Starling Relationship. This article published online ahead of print April 1, 2011. My guests today are Editor-in-Chief Bill Stanley, co-authors Peter Dutoum and Tom Irving, and leading expert Rick Moss. Let's get started.
Thanks, Kara. It's been almost a century since Ernest Starling's classic paper that showed that cardiac muscle fibers have a greater force of contraction when stimulated when the resting length is increased. It was subsequently shown that the underlying cellular mechanisms responsible for this Frank-Starling effect is these length-dependent myofilament activation, where sarcomeres have increased sensitivity to activating calcium at a greater initial length. Now, the precise mechanisms for this greater calcium sensitivity have been really elusive, but there's been a lot of progress in the last 20 years. The study we're discussing today by Farman et al. From Peter Dutoum's lab used focused high-intensity X-rays to assess the structure of the diastolic myofilament lattice just prior to electrical stimulation in isolated rat myocardium. The results suggest that a key mechanism underlying the Frank-Starling law of the heart is an increase in the orientation of myosin heads, so that they're more perpendicular to the thick filament when sarcomere lengths increase. So, Peter, what do you think is really the exciting thing here and the take-home message for those of us that don't really work in the field but think about the Frank-Starling law in terms of ventricular function?
I think you said it correctly. The mechanism, the molecular mechanism of length-dependent activation of the myofilaments is unknown, and we've been hunting down a couple of possibilities. We've been finding that, for instance, the spacing between the filaments is not likely the mechanism, or at least not the main mechanism. And now we found in this study a potential clue, I suppose, is the best word to use, that it might have something to do with ordering of the myosin heads. Of course, what we don't know, and that's probably what we're going to discuss, is how that might actually happen. But as we stretch the sarcomere, something seems to be happening at the myosin level, and making the crossbridges more prone to attach to actin filaments at a longer length.
So, Rick, what do you think are really the exciting thing about this paper and the strengths and weaknesses of the work?
This paper, to me, is really fundamentally quite important in pointing us toward a detailed structural mechanism for the Frank-Starling relationship. The field had indeed thought that filament lattice spacing changes as a functional length really accounted for the changes in force-generating capability. But earlier work by this group of investigators really suggested that that was not the case. So that left us for a period of time without a real understanding of the mechanism underlying this very important relationship. This work, which ultimately points to a mechanism that I think any of us would call structurally subtle, does point to now a definitive mechanism for explaining changes in force as a function of length in myofibrils, or changes in pressure as a function of end-diastolic volume in intact ventricles.
So, Tom, what's your response to that?
So I think what is happening when you take muscle from short to long length, there is some sort of head recruitment mechanisms that allows them to line up and become better positioned to generate force afterwards. And I think it might be a common factor in all these mechanisms. Now, we certainly don't know enough to have a smoking gun saying this is the case now, but I think this could be a useful line of inquiry in the future. And so since we've collected this data, we've got much more detailed X-ray patterns, and there's a lot more going on than just the this one parameter that we measure to measure the orientation of myosin heads. And the myosin layer lines, for instance, are telling the same story, and plus a lot of the other meridional reflections, that there is this ordering phenomenon going on. Now, there may be some details in this thing that we can tease out and that we're certainly trying very hard to do, that it may suggest that there may be some subtleties in this ordering, but, you know, this will wait till we finish analyzing some of the research we've been doing more recently.
It It's really very, very interesting that you observed this change in myosin head orientation with sarcomere length. And I think the question that is now begged, and it sounds as though you are working on exactly this sort of issue, is what is the mechanism by which length affects the myosin head orientation? To put this into a specific question, do you think that this is an effect of length, perhaps through diastolic strain or resting strain on the thick filament, that causes a change in packing of the thick filament and therefore changes the orientation of myosin heads? That's one question. The second question, and this would be an alternative mechanism, do you think that as the muscle is stretched, that there's actually a change in filament lattice packing, so thick and thin filament lattice packing, that has an effect on, a secondary effect on myosin head orientation as the heads extend from the thick filament. So these are alternate mechanisms. Is this a mechanism that arises within the thick filament, or is this a mechanism that arises through interactions within the filament lattice?
I think as a first answer is we don't know, of course, and there might be a third possibility, which is still mechanical strain transmission, and that is through the thin filament. So one question is the effect there when we eliminate, for instance, all interactions of myosin heads with the actin filament? Another way we're going to approach this is by using the Titan mutant rat that comes from your institute and from Marion Greaser, because that would point to a potential role of Titan in transmitting the strain. But in the end, we need to piece this together. If it's a mechanical strain issue and not just the packing issue, how is this done? Which proteins are involved? And the only way out is to use animals with mutations in these proteins to see whether this mechanism is affected. Now, Tom can probably comment on the packing issue, because I think the X-ray structural data should be able to tell us that difference, but he's the expert in the X-rays.
Well, every place we've looked when we put passive strain on a thick filament, we've seen length changes in the thick filament. And so this could suggest that if strained thick filaments change the inward sides of the heads or docked in some way, or if there was some mechanism to release these, then that would suggest a mechanism. I don't know of any good mechanism, but there's a lot of this work on, you know, sort of the sort of super relaxed state notion that people have, or, you know, like when heads in relaxed states under rather artificial conditions, mind, you have this J motif that they find the turned off relaxed state. You can imagine having a strain building up in these things and somehow releasing things, allowing things to move. We're looking at diastole in twitching muscle and how that would correspond to the conditions in a completely turned off muscle. But it does seem not unreasonable that, you know, heads could be turned off in the relaxed muscle and then somehow maybe not turned on and precisely, but changing equilibrium in a particular direction by strain.
Mm. The problem with that notion, Tom, is that as Rick showed a long time ago, in cardiac muscle, the myosin heads are never truly relaxed. There's always a sub pool of actively cycling bridges that are there, and the beats just follow each other too rapidly, I think, to get into this very super relaxed state.
No, one thing that there's been a lot of interest in is these drugs, you know, for improving systolic function by increasing calcium sensitivity. And of course, in heart failure, there's a lot of problems, but one of them is the failure to take advantage of the Frank Starling mechanisms, and there's a loss of calcium sensitivity. Do you see, how does this apply to that, you think?
You're absolutely right. And so the larger quest, of course, is to find ways to manipulate the contractile state of the myofilaments in a failing heart without having to change the intracellular calcium concentration, which we know, of course, is bad in terms of arrhythmias and so forth. The failing heart is unable to fully utilize its Frank-Starling relationship, and developing drugs that specifically target the proteins that we hope to discover that are play a role in this regulatory mechanism would be a good avenue to to develop for development of these kind of drugs.
Well put. Well, we look forward to your future work, and thank you for submitting this great paper to AJP Heart and Circ. Kara?
Thanks for listening to the AJP Heart and Circ podcast series.